the verse from Ephesians chapter 5 that you might want me to address is that verse 18 where St. Paul wrote, "Do not get drunk with wine, which will only ruin you. Instead, be filled by the Spirit." And if I were to address that verse, I would point out that Paul was not condemning the drinking of wine. I mean, wine to the ancients was what tap water is to us, the common beverage consumed every day. Often wine was diluted with water, a practice which some experts have suggested helped to disinfect the water from the diseases that it was prone to in antiquity. So Paul the Apostle wasn't condemning the drinking of wine. He was advising against excessive consumption to the point of intoxication. We know that drunk people do foolish things and can reflect badly on the reputation of all the followers of Jesus. So Paul's message was not "don't drink wine," but it was "don't get drunk." And actually, he uses a little play on words here, little Pauline humor. Of course, wine and other intoxicating beverages are often referred to as spirits. So in effect, what Paul was saying is don't overfill yourself with spirits, but be filled by the Spirit of God. Very clever, that Paul. But that's not the verse I'm going to address today. We're a nice group of people. We all know lots of people. There is room for more people here today. So why aren't more of the people we know here with us? Is there anything that each of us can do about that? That was the situation that Paul was addressing in this portion of his letter to the new Christians in Ephesus. Ephesus was a bustling seaport on the coast of what is now known as the nation of Turkey. According to some sources, Ephesus at that time was second only to Rome as a cosmopolitan center of commerce and culture, second only to Rome. You might find that hard to believe today, because the ruins of the ancient seaport are 6 miles inland from the Aegean Sea. About 500 years ago, an earthquake significantly changed the topography of the region and the shoreline, thus leaving Ephesus high and dry. In Paul's day, which was about 30 years after the first Easter, the population of Ephesus was diverse, it was sophisticated, it was engaged. Ephesus was known for an enormous temple, a temple to a popular regional deity named Artemis. Some suggest that this temple may have been as much as 4 times bigger than the iconic Parthenon atop the Acropolis overlooking Athens, up to 4 times bigger than the Parthenon. Artemis was revered by the Ephesians as the goddess of the hunt, wild animals, and the wilderness, and chastity, and childbirth. I guess they had both covered there. The goddess of hunt, chastity, childbirth, wild animals, and the wilderness. It's quite a diverse portfolio, but I suppose goddesses can do whatever they want. On one of his missionary journeys, Paul settled in Ephesus, and he spoke about Jesus for 3 months to the Jewish people in the synagogue there, with only some success. In fact, some in his Jewish audience heckled him and badmouthed all followers of that man, Jesus of Nazareth. And so Paul moved his talks rented out a local lecture hall where for 2 years, he spoke convincingly about the supremacy of Jesus over even the popular local deity Artemis. Paul won many converts to the Christian life from pagans, from devotees of Artemis, and even from some more of the Jewish people. And it was to those folks that Paul wrote what we now call the letter to the Ephesians. He wrote it sometime after he had sailed away across the Aegean Sea to the Greek province of Macedonia. Now, writing a letter and having it delivered was no simple task back then, so one had to have a compelling reason to do so. In his letter to the Ephesians, Paul wanted to continue guiding these new Christians in how to live out their faith in the risen Lord Jesus. He counseled them that their trust in God, their hope for today and for eternity, their concern and their compassion for their fellow Christians and for all people, he said that all that should be readily apparent by their manner of life. They should share their faith by the words they use, by the priorities they choose, the way their actions embody what they believe. And so the verses that I want us to focus on today are verses 15 and 16. And that's where Paul wrote this. So be careful how you live. Don't live like ignorant people, but like wise people. Make good use of every opportunity you have, because these are evil days. Let's start at the end of that verse. What did Paul mean by the expression, "These are evil days"? Well, from what I could find, that simply was Paul's way of referring to the environment surrounding the new Christians. The political and cultural climate of Ephesus was resistant to the good news of Jesus. The Ephesian community as a whole was more invested in their claim to fame as the home of the magnificent temple to the goddess Artemis. Having a temple there was good for business, bringing pilgrims, bringing the curious to visit Ephesus. There's a story in Acts chapter 19 you should read sometime. It tells about a flourishing industry in Ephesus, an industry creating souvenir models of the temple of Artemis, creating these souvenir models out of silver. One silversmith named Demetrius organized a public demonstration. He got the rest of the silversmiths together, and they protested that all of this talk about Jesus by Paul and his people, all of this talk about Jesus was threatening the livelihood of the silversmiths. It was threatening the peace and order of Ephesus, and it was threatening the reputation of the goddess Artemis. They riled up the whole city, and two of Paul's associates were seized and taken to the enormous public theater. You know those Greek theaters, the big semicircular things? Took them to this theater where a mob had assembled, thinking that there was going to be some sort of trial. And the book of Acts says that the crowd was shouting this and shouting that, but that most people had no idea what the commotion was about or how it even started. It was only the brave, cool-headed action of the city clerk that calmed the crowd and got them to disperse. Neither Paul nor any other Christians were persecuted in Ephesus, at least not at that time. But that incident in Acts chapter 19 captured the environment that the new Christians of Ephesus found themselves living in, an environment not very receptive to the good news of God's love in Jesus Christ, good news that gave Christians hope and guidance for their lives. that disinterest or even hostility facing Christians in Ephesus. That's what Paul meant by evil days. That's why he advised, so be careful how you live. Don't live like ignorant people, but like wise people. So, how were they to go about sharing the good news then? Well, they probably shouldn't stage a pig roast at the local synagogue. They probably shouldn't sell t-shirts on the steps of the Artemis Temple, t-shirts that read, "My God created the stone you used to make your God's temple." Those would be examples of what Paul meant as being ignorant, not wise. Instead, aware that disinterest or hostility toward Christianity was characteristic of their surroundings, Paul urged the Ephesians to make good use of every opportunity you have. So what might those opportunities be for them to share with others the trust they have in God because of the love of Jesus? What opportunities would they have to share? Well, we can imagine Christians in Ephesus and elsewhere back then consoling a neighbor on the death of a child, taking in the beauty of the sun setting over the Aegean Sea, chatting with a friend while shopping at the Agora, the open-air market, helping a friend rebuild his house after a fire, conversation during a long, hot journey down a dusty road, encouraging a friend overcome by disappointment. Perhaps Paul had in mind everyday opportunities like those, opportunities when Christians could share with someone why their faith in God through Jesus guided their life. And that got me to thinking, in our day, what might opportunities look like for us? Well, I think some of the opportunities available to the Ephesians to share their faith with a stranger or neighbor or family member, they still apply to us today. Chatting while shopping, helping a neighbor, admiring a sunset, consoling a friend. Settings I can imagine today would have people from this church at the lake, in a park, on a deck, in a pub, at a restaurant, enjoying some wine or coffee with friends. You're telling your friend about the inspiration you receive from setting aside time each Sunday to worship, to remind you that you are loved and cared for by God, that your life unfolds within God's overarching care. And I was thinking this week about the many opportunities that our church itself provides that you can make use of to share the place that your faith has in your life. Opportunities like this Thursday's community meal gives you a chance to invite someone to join you. And if they're not available or you're not, at least you can tell them about one of the good things our church is doing. We have social occasions coming up at our church, like a free picnic following worship the Sunday after Labor Day, a ticketed clam bake open to the public the first Sunday in October. When a friend maybe shares with you how she's struggling to answer her child's questions about God or death, or violence, or meanness. Tell them our Sunday school, our adult education programs can be resources for kids and for their parents too. Our free artist concert series this year includes a modern dance company, a magician and mentalist, a jazz group, a brass band, plus classical piano, classical choral, classical orchestral works. Think of people you know who would be interested to come into a church for something like that. As it says in our bulletin announcements every week, you can share the importance of your faith in your life by doing something as simple as liking the Facebook page of our church and our preschool. Like the posts about the various activities and things that get put out there, often by Sally Schreiner, but other people too. Like us on Facebook. Another opportunity not too far away. Our annual trash and treasure sale gives you opportunities to invite people to enjoy the thrill of the hunt on that first Saturday in October. Or maybe you can invite them to join you for a morning or a day of volunteering and fellowship during that week of setup that precedes the sale. And of course, there is space in the pew next to you. You can invite someone to sit there with you to experience what it can mean to worship God, the peace, the encouragement, the support, the joy, the hope, the calm. I think Paul envisioned a need in his time and in ours. A need for us to make good use of every opportunity we have to share with the people we interact with through the week. What's meaningful to us about our church and our faith? Paul's instructions to the Ephesians imply that it is possible to live the full Christian life in the context of the world, those evil days that they faced in Ephesus. No, the whole world may not be receptive to the message of Christ, but you know what? Many are. People in your world, people in your circle of acquaintance, may be feeling lost and adrift, disillusioned with leaders, angry about the mistreatment of vulnerable people, especially children. People you know may be lonely, anxious, hopeless, longing, defeated, uncertain. They need the message Jesus has commissioned us to share, to go therefore and make disciples of all nations. They need the message that in Jesus Christ, God assures us that God forgives and accepts and loves you. That God invites you to accept and love God in return.